Okay, so if anyone comes in this Home Depot and they try to rob the Home Depot or steal something from the store, what would I grab to help out everyone, help out the fight? Okay, I'd start looking around. I would see the saws. I say, okay, maybe, the pieces of like rebar or dowel rods or boards that I could use to smack people with. I would be like, hell yeah, dude. I would go for that. I would do the Donatello thing or whichever one holds the quarterstaff and, kick some freaking ass. Mind you, I was in fourth grade.
Let's do it!
What's up, everyone? Welcome to another exciting, electrifying episode of Horse Feathers. I am your host with the most, the host with the most,
most genius man in the
genius, just the good and fresh and God feather. That's me. I'm Jake, and I'm your host, and I'm excited to be here on this, the most highly rated independent podcast in Dallas. Thank you very much. Yes, that's absolutely right. Okay, we just recently got that designation from ourselves. Okay, we do not, we haven't yet to be recognized in, mainstream media, which is fine.
The media said what?
It's not that big of a deal. They will eventually, or they won't, and it doesn't matter.
Fuck them.
It just doesn't matter. So, we've gotten some good reviews in. Sean Connery, what do you think? What do you think about it? What do you think about the show so far?
I don't think it's that bad.
Yeah. See, and that's what. And if there's anyone's opinion that you can depend on, it's Sean Connery.
I think that it depends entirely on the circumstances.
Well, that's absolutely true, Sean. And thank you so much for chiming in.
Think it's good to slap a woman?
No, I didn't say that. Okay, so anyway, moving on. I hope you guys are well. I hope you guys are good. Make sure that if you enjoy yourself here, that you leave us some sort of hate mail or adoration, fan mail at horsefeatherspod@gmail.com. And you can also follow us at horsefeatherspod on Instagram, and we are horsefeatherpod on Twitter. Because they ran out of letters. Apparently, they couldn't handle our full name. And that brings me great shame, but that's the, that's the cards that the Lord dealt us right there. I'm feeling good. I went to, I'm coming at you from a new and improved desk situation. I don't know how you guys feel about your workspace, but I've become very particular about it. I used to be able to, just stack up a bunch of pillows on the couch and put my computer on top of that and just sit there and write essays and get things done. But those days are over. Okay. I got to keep things organized because the more organized my space is, the more organized my brain is. And so people that know me like kind of are surprised whenever they see people that know me well aren't, but people that kind of see me and see the long hair and the unkempt beard and the general demeanor, and they think, well, this guy's a hot mess. And they're not wrong, but generally speaking, I like to work in a very clean space where all of the things that I need are within arm's reach and that I have room, to put everything that I need. Surface space is very important. And so I created more surface space today. I built some kind of impromptu shelves on top of this old desk that I inherited, when I came to this classroom. So I built one thing to keep my monitors on, and I'll post a picture of it. But I got one thing to keep my monitors on, and I've got another thing to I've got another thing to put my keyboard on if I want to stand up and make it a standing desk. But it's awesome because I've got all these surfaces now to put shit on and don't, not feel disorder. I've got room enough for all my beverages. You know that I keep that coffee hot all day, which is probably why I've been having trouble sleeping. But I've got, I've got an afternoon pot going right now, and I've got my seltzer water always. So I've got room and space to put all those things. Made myself a little bookshelf underneath the little shelves, and I'm not going to lie, the shelves definitely don't look pretty. I basically made it out of some board that I had cut there at Home Depot, and that was actually an adventure this morning. That was a fun time. I like going to Home Depot. Home Depot smells good. You walk in and everything smells like fresh pine or cedar, kind of a mixture of, you know, lumber smells and I don't know. I like wandering around in Home Depot and seeing all the tools that I can't afford and don't have space for. And every time that I go to Home Depot, it's for very, very specific things, right? No, I don't often. If they had an apartment depot, I think Mitch Hedberg made that joke. It's like, I can't do anything with a Home Depot. I live in an apartment. You know, I need an apartment depot. But when I go there, it's for very specific things. And today I went to get the board, and I went to get some brackets, and I went to get some screws, and I got the exact amount of things that I needed to make these shelves. I had already measured everything out. I was ready to roll to make these kind of shitty standing desk shelves for my desk to maximize some space. And I don't own a skill saw or a table saw, and so I had to rely on the cutting machines that they have there at Home Depot. And there was a gentleman there of African origin, and I say that because he had a very deeply sub-Saharan African, West African accent that I recognize because I've known some Africans in my day, know some Africans, been to Africa a couple times in my youth. And so he was working at Home Depot, and he was very cranky. Okay. He was already like very, had this vibe of, what do you want? Cause you have to, you know, there's a cut station that you bring your boards to, and you just, you rely on whoever's available, and you have to wait for them to, you know, you get called over the loudspeaker, customer service to the cutting board and all this and that. And it's a whole thing. It's a very embarrassing, you know, situation. But I gave him the measurements, and he was just like, I think he was cranky because he was just like, what do you want? Like, I got to cut these, and you know, what's going on here? I was like, can you cut these dimensions? And he's like, he was trying to tell me that we don't really do project cutting, you know, which was fair. Like, mostly what they do is they cut it down to size so you can fit it in your car. They're not there so that they can do your damn projects for you, which I understand. Totally get it. But I also don't own a saw, so I was going to try to see if I could negotiate my way into getting him to cut them for me. It was just basically four cuts. Four cuts, that's all, right? And he told me that it's like, oh, it won't fit in the machine. We got to try this machine, and then this machine didn't work. But he was real cranky about it the whole time, and I felt like I was haggling, you know? I was like, no, come on, it fits. Look, there it is. Look, awesome. Yeah, cool. And he's like, nah, it doesn't fit. And then he's like, all right, I can make it fit. And he did this crazy, you know, move where he propped up part of the machine, which was too big for the small piece of wood that we were trying to cut. Or like I had any part of anything to do with that. No, when he was trying to cut it, he, you know, the piece of the board was too small almost for the machine, not really, but he was kind of, you know, acting like it was a big deal. It was fine, okay. But he did cram, like, he made it work by cramming in this, you know, covering up some sort of, like, taking up some sort of extra space or whatever because it was too small with this spare piece of, you know, fence post or whatever that he had laying around, and boom, he cut it perfectly. Bada bing. And I was like, this guy gets it done. He's cranky about it, but he gets it done. And I respect that, okay? I like going to Home Depot because I like the people that work there. They're usually no-nonsense sorts of people like that, that, you know, you're not going to find too many Karen-type situations filmed in a Home Depot. You know what I mean? Like, you're not going to... We've covered a few Karen situations on this podcast, and you're not going to find too many of those videos that are filmed inside of a Home Depot. Because it's just not something that happens a whole lot. If you're in Home Depot, other than young couples buying their first appliances or something like that, I can't imagine, and even then, like, it's a pretty rare situation that that you find those situations happening in Home Depot. Usually they happen in Walmart or Target or something like that, usually where a bunch of white ladies are congregating. But Home Depot, you just got people that know what they need and know how to take care of it. You got, like, this guy who's just like, what? You want me to cut what? This bullshit? You know, he's not treating me. He's like, oh, yeah, like, absolutely, sir. Yeah, we can do that. Anything for our beloved customer. He's like, no, what the fuck? No, I got to do what? You don't have a saw. What? Ugh, fine, here. He just cuts them real quick. And I'll say they're pretty uneven, but they work. I made them work. I don't want anything to look pretty. I just needed it to be functional. Which is why you go to Home Depot, right? That's why I didn't go buy a fancy, you know, I spent $40 on the brackets and the lumber and the screws. And that was it. And I made it, you know, I had my new friend at Home Depot help me cut it. And I, you know how to use a power drill. And I, you know, don't mean to brag, but I just screwed it together and it fits perfectly. It works. It's very functional. Not pretty. Not pretty at all. Could use like a stain, maybe a sanding down, or to be scrapped and replaced with better looking actual furniture. That's the thing with homemade furniture. Even something as simple as a standing desk shelf. You know what part's homemade and what part a professional had their hand in. But it looks cool and it looks nice, and I have my friends at Home Depot to thank for. I love, like I said, going into Home Depot. That's probably one of my favorite stores to just kind of walk around. It was not when I was a child. When I was younger, I used to loathe going to Home Depot, and we would, or Lowe's or any hardware store like that. And we would always go when I was like a little bit older, elementary school age, we would always go because that's when we were in the process of having our house built and doing some internal projects ourselves to save money. Because my dad is, for better or worse, a very let's do it ourselves kind of guy. And a lot of the times that works out. Sometimes, hilariously, it does not. We won't get into that. I love my dad. Would not dare put him on blast, at least not yet. Not until I remember specific instances. But we would always go to Home Depot as a family. And there's nothing worse than going to Home Depot as a kid because nothing there interests you. Hardly at all. We would just walk around and we would like be bored. And you know, like whenever you're a little kid and your legs are tired just from standing, and it's just because and they would normally be fine because kids are fine. Kids have a lot of energy, right? If it was like a playground or Chuck E. Cheese or Six Flags or something like that, something fun, you know, running around outside in the creek, something like that, then I would be fine. I wouldn't be complaining about my legs hurting. But when you have a kid in a boring store and they don't want to be there anymore, they start talking about my legs hurting. And they legitimately do sometimes. But mostly it's just because kids are little bitches. And they're bored and they're focused too much on their tired legs because they're bored. But they're fine. You know, I was fine. But I say that to say, you know, one of the things that I would do when I would walk around Home Depot is as we were walking around and let my mind wander and I didn't have anything to do and I was so bored and my legs were tired, but my mom and dad were tired of listening to me talk about my legs being tired, and so I was, you know, no luck there. I started thinking about how, you know, I could turn certain things in the hardware store into weapons. And I don't mean like a Columbine kind of trench coat-y sort of way, okay? I'm talking like a little kid fantasizing about fighting bad guys. That's what I'm talking about. Because I would. I would think like, okay, dude, this is a legitimate train of thought that I would have as a child. I would think, okay, so if anyone comes in this Home Depot and they try to rob the Home Depot or steal something from the store, what would I grab to help out everyone, help out the fight, okay? You know, I'd start looking around. I would see the saws, you know. I said, okay, maybe, you know. The pieces of, like, rebar or dowel rods or boards that I could use to smack people with, I would be like, hell yeah, dude. I would go for that. I would do the Donatello thing or whichever one holds the quarterstaff and, you know, kick some freaking ass. Mind you, I was in fourth grade. Very small young man, not tough, not a fighter, a shit talker for sure. I don't think anyone's surprised by that. But I always thought that if I were in a situation where I was being kidnapped or in a situation where I had to fight an adult or someone way bigger than me, that I could probably still win. You know, like maybe even if it's like a real big person and they pick me up, I'll fight dirty. I'll kick you in the shins. I'll kick you in the balls. I'll gouge your eyes out. Like, whatever, dude. I'm scrappy as fuck. Go ahead, mess with me. You know? See what happens. And I still kind of think that sometimes as an adult. Some, you know, if I'm in a situation where I'm angry at a stranger on the road, or I honestly sometimes would still wonder, like, what would happen right now if, like, you know, someone came in here? What would happen if I needed to protect my wife? Okay. You know, that's one of the things, too, that you're just like, dude, if I have to kick someone's ass because of my wife, dude.
You have a wife?
Then, like, I would have to, you know, I would have to for sure use the rebar or whatever it is, you know? And I think that, part of that will never go away. Just thinking that I can kick anyone's ass. That's kind of what it really is. It's just like pretty much an assurance, a self-assurance that, if it came down to it, on sheer willpower alone, I could kick anyone's ass. Hopefully that theory never gets to get tested, because I can imagine it's not true. I can imagine it's not true. But that's what I would do when I was a kid. I mean, that originated from walking around Home Depot, bored as hell, and trying to figure out how I would turn a lamp into a clobbering implement. And I still think about that every time that I walk into Home Depot and smell the smell of the lumber and the pine and the cedar and all that. It's good. A little bit of that comes back every time. Just that little, yeah, I could kick everyone's ass. Except for the women that work there, actually. I could kick anyone else's ass except for the women that work at Home Depot. They are not to be trifled with, in my experience. I've never trifled with one of them, mind you. I would never. But the people that I know, the women that I know that have worked Home Depot, have, generally speaking, a very thick skin in terms of in what they can put up with in the bullshit that they take on, which is zero, by the way. Zero bullshit, okay? They walk around with those aprons on, and they got their hands in their pockets like they own the place, because they do. Again, I'm not, you know, I admire them. I respect them. Because women at Home Depot have to put up with things that no one else in retail has to put up with, which is know-it-all dudes. You know the sheer amount of mansplaining that has to go on to a woman that works at Home Depot. Now, sweetheart, let me tell you something. Now, I've got a measuring tape. You know what one of them is? You know what a measuring tape is? It's this little thing that you can just stretch out. And she's like, yes, I know what that is. Thanks. It's that I know more than you meme from Ron Swanson. But the women at Home Depot legitimately know more than a lot of the dudes that roll in there. But I can only imagine that everyone's respectful, generally speaking. I imagine that everyone's okay, right? Overall, but I imagine every once in a while, a woman that works at Home Depot has to put up with some dude who just comes in here like, listen, toots, you know? Just comes in immediately, like the only person that can help him, you know, is a woman, and he kind of feels like, ugh, son of a bitch, like, I don't know if she knows what I'm talking about. You know, all this stuff, probably mumbling to himself. I'm just thinking that happens, hopefully not all the time, but I can imagine that in a place like Home Depot, that it happens enough to where you just, you become a very no-nonsense, no-bullshit-taken kind of person, which women in general naturally are and should be, but I would imagine that women that work in male-dominated environments, let's say. I work in a very female-dominated field, teaching. Right, like it's especially in the younger grades, but just generally speaking, I think that women that work in male fields, you know, I was watching Theo Von's podcast, not to mention another podcast on my podcast, but I was watching Theo Von's podcast interviewing this female trucker. And she had some crazy stories, you know, because that's a very male dominated field. And so I just imagine that people that, like women that work in Home Depot, women that work in like blue collar environments, have to put up with a lot of bullshit. And God bless them, you know? God bless them for it. That's what I'm saying. Like the women that I have known personally that have also worked at Home Depot happen to be among the toughest. So here's to you, Home Depot, ladies of Home Depot. All right? You wear that apron well, you wear it with pride. And take no shit. I did something that is very cliche for an English teacher to do, and that is that I watched Dead Poets Society. Or I started to, anyway. I couldn't get through it, because I've watched it so many times before that I'm just like, I don't know if it's been long enough for me to want to watch this again. It is a favorite, which I know is cliche. Okay, before we go any further, I understand that everything about what I just said is like the typical cliche. It's like, are we reading your Tinder biography? Like, what is happening here? Like, oh yeah, I'm an English teacher, really love Dead Poets Society, hashtag oh captain, my captain. No. I know. I understand. It's not ideal. Okay. I like other movies too. It's not the end all be all, but I like that movie, and I think that that's fine. When I was actually starting to teach, whenever I started student teaching, I taught freshmen the first semester that I did, or the only semester that I did student teaching. And one time, one of the freshmen, she said, "You remind me of the Robin Williams guy in that movie with the professor." She's like, "Dead guy." I was like, "Dead Poets Society?" She's like, "Yeah." I was like, oh my God. At that point, like my first semester teaching, for a student to say, "You remind me of," you know, this was after I had already delivered a lesson. And I guess I had done it in a way that reminded her of the kind of gregariousness. I don't know what it was that connected, but she's like, "You remind me of the guy in Dead Poets Society." And that amped me up whenever I was starting to teach. Like, that was a good feeling. To hear a student say that, it's like, hell yeah. And it's pretty cool. You know, it's pretty cool, pretty cool movie. But it is a cliche. It is one of those things where I got kind of partway through and I was just like, ugh, okay. I think I should leave work at work. That's what I think about movies about teaching, is just like, what am I watching this for? It's like someone who works as a surgeon, you know, watching Grey's Anatomy. It's like, I get this shit at work. What do I need this for? Although I will say, comedies about teaching are priceless. There was this very short-lived comedy that I encourage you to look up clips of, called, I think it's called Those Who Can't, playing off of the saying, those who can do and those who can't teach. Which teachers resent, but I mean, in some cases, not mine, of course, because I'm a genius. Okay. Because I'm the, hang on, where are you?
The most What's genius that? Man in the whole world.
Jake. And so, you know, it's not me that I'm talking about, but there are some individual teachers to which that applies. But it's called Those Who Can't. And it was so funny because it was just the most irreverent thing. You know, the irreverence around teaching, like AP Bio is another very similar concept. Vice Principals on HBO, I think, with like that Danny McBride guy. You know, all those like just raunchy comedies in the context of school is especially funny to teachers, or at least to teachers with a sense of humor about their own jobs. You know, teachers that get offended at and I know that this has happened, teachers that get offended at comedic depictions of teachers are the exact ones that are, you know, the reason that they're upset is because they are the ones who are being lampooned. But if you have a shred of sense of humor about your job and how ridiculous it is to teach teenagers and young people how to do like these semi-relevant, you know, life skills at times, and for an adult to be in charge of doing that, like that, it's an absurd construct and ripe for parody. So I love them. I love that. There's also another one while we're on the subject, called Hoops on Netflix. That one, we'll say is not a, don't go in that with a faint heart. That's not for the faint of heart. Okay. That one's especially raunchy, but it's also just hilariously irreverent. And anytime that you are in a workspace or a culture or a profession that has its own kind of little quirks and things that other people don't understand, and someone gets that exactly right in the form of and makes fun of that exactly right, I think that's the joy. That's comedy. That's what it is, folks. Anyway, I've talked plenty of the things that are happening in my life, so I'm going to give me just a second. When we come back, we will get into some very, very important news. But until then, we'll see you in just 1 second. Hi, folks. Thanks so much for listening to Horse Feathers. If you like what you're hearing, please rate and review our show on Apple Podcasts and subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts so that you don't miss a single episode. You can follow us on Instagram at Horse Feathers Pod. You can follow us on Twitter at Horse Feather Pod, or you can email us at horsefeatherspod@gmail.com. If you like what you're hearing and you want more, $2 a month on the Patreon, patreon.com/horsefeatherspod. $2 there a month gets you 4 extra episodes a month, 1 per week, and early access to the regular episodes. We want to hear from you. Please send in questions, comments, violent complaints, or requests for advice over the DMs or email to be featured on the show. More than anything, if you're enjoying yourself, thank you so much for being here. Make sure to tell your friends. All right, folks, we are back. Welcome to the second half of the program, wherein we will be getting into some
news that's important.
That's right. We are getting into some news that important, and we got some juicy, spicy stories for you today. You know how we like to cover some things that some crazy pastors do?
The media said what?
You know, sometimes we like to... Okay, shut the fuck up. So we like to talk about some of the things that are supposed to be... Some of the times when people are supposed to be God's chosen people... you know, they're still people, and so they misstep sometimes. And this, of course, is the case with, you may have heard, this fella named Carl Lentz, who is Justin Bieber's pastor. Okay, and that's all you need to know about him to understand probably what happened. You can probably draw your own conclusions, right? Anytime that someone is described as a celebrity's guru or a celebrity's pastor or a celebrity's this or that, you can probably raise a little bit of an eyebrow there because they are trying to become celebrities themselves. That's why he's got a trendy haircut. Look at a picture of this guy. He's got a trendy haircut. There's some pictures that I think Joe Rogan made fun of one time where, because he had basically his pants all saggy and you could see like the bottom part of his abs, you know? And he was all jacked and shit like this. And this is, this story is a case study in why it's just not a good idea to be hot, okay? And if you are hot, that's fine. You know the responsibility that you bear. But this is one reason that personally, it's you know why I refuse to get hot. Okay, I'm never gonna get super jacked. It's just not gonna happen. It's not that it couldn't happen. Okay, mind you, if I had the willpower, dude, I would be so hot. Okay, I would blow your mind. But it would also cause problems for me, okay? And I think that's what happens. Every time that you get rich or hot, bad things happen to you. And so I'm going to be okay looking and financially comfortable, and that will suffice for me, as opposed to rich and hot. Because you feel too cocky. You start to explore outside the bounds of what you normally would if you weren't hot, okay? If you are a hot person, I implore you to think like an ugly person when you're making your decisions. Think, if I were ugly, would I be flirting with this girl at a bar, even though I'm, happily married or have a girlfriend back home or something like that? If I was ugly, would I be giving, anyone else the time of day? No, of course not. You would gladly pay your tab, and go home to your loving significant other. But if you're hot, people give you more opportunity to, mess around a little bit. And that's what happened here with Carl Lentz. It says, disgraced Hillsong church pastor Carl Lentz has gone into hiding, apparently, after being fired from the trendy church. Lentz, who has preached to Kendall and Kylie Jenner, Chris Pratt, and Kevin Durant, among many other stars, he's preached to them, interesting, got the boot after they realized that he had been unfaithful in his marriage, and now apparently he is embarrassed and unreachable. He's not returning anyone's calls and things like that. Meanwhile, we're told Bieber started distancing himself from Lentz over a year ago. Apparently, Justin quit going, and it was pretty abrupt. He separated from the church a while ago. They used him, the source said. They were opportunistic leeches. Carl, hipster too cool for school, is a total used Carl salesman type of guy. Yeah, here's the thing. No shit. Just by looking at this guy, you know what's going on, okay? He likes to be seen. He likes to be written about in the press like this whenever he says, he's preached to the Jenners and Kevin Durant and all these people, and he's been seen hanging out with Bieber. And the fact alone that Justin Bieber, distanced himself from the guy in the first place should be the one and only indicator, okay? This is Jay Biebs that we're talking about here, and God love him, but he's made some decisions that were somewhat unsavory in the past. And so if that guy is distancing himself from you, you got problems. You got big problems. And of course they were opportunistic leeches, right? That's exactly what happens. Says he was always about the preacher. He was always living the pop star life, popping bottles on private planes. The infidelity was not a surprise. Yep. At one point he was in Australia with Bieber at a bar with his shirt off and doing shots. Think about the preachers that you know. Okay. Think about the preachers that you know. Maybe you went to a church, or you grew up in a church, or you went to a couple churches one time. Think about that preacher. Now think about that preacher in the back of a private plane with his shirt off doing shots. And I don't mean like hot and doing shots. I mean like the preacher as he is right now. The preacher in your mind that you're imagining from your youth or maybe a church you go to now. Okay. That guy with his shirt off, as is, doing shots on a private plane. Now that I've thoroughly disgusted you, hopefully think, I mean, that's how insane it is for a man of, a man of God, so to speak, to be popping bottles and partying and things like that. I bet he out-partied Bieber. I bet that's why Bieber let him go. Not because he was, you know, his pride was wounded because he got out-partied, but because he was like, dude, you need to relax, bro. Justin Bieber is your designated driver. You're a little bit too far gone. And that's what happened here. So apparently he had a 5-month relationship with this lady. No shit. And that's what happened. And so they got, you know, they fired him because even trendy churches don't like it when their leadership goes off and has illicit affairs. So, Carl Lentz, I know you're a fan of the show. I know you're listening. So we hope that you're safe. Just know that you have a home here with us. If you need time and space to recover, you can join the Patreon, patreon.com/horsefeatherspod. And I know times are tough right now, Carl, but you got $2. Okay. You got $2 a month. You can throw our way. You can join the Discord and we'll heal you with some memes and, some extra content.
Yeah, dumb son of a bitch.
All right. No, he didn't mean that. So, moving right along, we have some, breaking news from our friends at Vogue. Okay. Friends of the show, Vogue magazine. Apparently caused some controversy this week whenever they posted a cover of their magazine that involved Harry Styles, once leader of the pop group. What was it? Five boys, five men, jump five. No, what? One Direction. There were five of them, I think, but there was only One Direction. So. Maybe there were three. I'm not sure. But in any case, he's doing his own thing now and he's promoting his own solo music. I've heard it. It's quite good. And he's always fun to, on Saturday Night Live and things like that. He's a cool dude, Harry Styles. I'm a fan. But he posed in this very frilly, very feminine dress that he had a picture of himself in on the Vogue cover of Vogue magazine. And people lost their goddamn minds, okay? People were freaking out. People were like, well, this is just absurd. I can't believe that a man would blah, 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 blah. Specifically, right-leaning pundits and people like Candace Owens and people like our boy Ben Shapiro, okay? Good old dry-ass P-word man himself, Ben Shapiro, is talking about this, and he says, first of all, Candace Owens said, there is no society that can survive without strong men. The East knows this. In the West, the steady feminization of our men at the same time that is Marxism being blah, 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 ends it with, bring back manly men. Okay. And Ben Shapiro quotes it, and he says, this is perfectly obvious. Anyone who pretends that this is not a referendum on masculinity for men to don floofy dresses is treating you as a full-on idiot. And all of his followers are like, well, I'm no idiot. Masculinity and femininity exist. Outward indicators of masculinity and femininity exist in nearly every human culture. Boys are taught to be more masculine in virtually every human culture because the role of men is not always the same as the role of women. And he goes on and he just kind of keeps on freaking out. But again, we're freaking out about a magazine. We're freaking out about a pop star dressing flamboyantly. Which, why that would surprise anyone is beyond me in a post Bowie world. Okay? A lot of the hard rockers would, you know, dress up as women too, sometimes just for like the shock factor or just for which, you know, is part of it. It's like, oh, a guy in a dress. Like, that's different. That's obviously something that they took into account. But Ben's over here acting, it's like, oh, this is like the downfall of humanity. Oh, dry ass P-word boy himself is over here just like freaking out, you know. It's like okay, so here's the thing. Here's why that is masculine, okay? It's masculine as hell to wear a dress and take a picture of you wearing that dress and post it on a nationally syndicated magazine. Dude, that's the manliest shit that you can do, because that means that you're so comfortable in your manhood that you don't care who sees you in that dress, and God bless you. Okay? I think that if it were more socially acceptable, I would wear dresses, especially in the summer, dude. When I just want things to be light and breezy. But I gotta wear pants or short pants, regular pants to work. I would love to wear dresses to work if it was socially acceptable. But I don't, because it's not. Right? And that's because I'm not as manly as Harry Styles. But you know, that's that. People freaking out about someone on a magazine cover is in and of itself a pretty dumb thing to freak out about. So good luck to Ben as he figures that out. Good luck. So something else I read that was the dumbest thing that I think that I've heard so far in this coronarific time is this idea of this college putting out some guidelines for COVID and saying that we want, let's see, it's a St. Olaf College in Minnesota. This is from the Minnesota Sun. Urges students not to kiss while having sex due to COVID-19. St. Olaf College encouraged students to, quote, avoid kissing while having sex to reduce spreading coronavirus, according to, who is St. Olaf? Was he the saint of shitty advice? According to a photo provided to the Daily Caller News Foundation, the Minnesota College's flyer also urged students to wear a mask and steer clear of partners with symptoms of COVID-19 and reduce your number of sexual partners and use barrier protection like internal/external condoms as well as dental dams. According to the picture provided to DCNF, the flyer also... What the hell is a dental dam? That sounds like it would be hard to breathe. I don't know what it is, but it sounds like it would make it hard to breathe. The flyer also reportedly listed various sex hygiene recommendations. Remember to wash your hands and your sex toys before and after sex with warm, soapy water for at least 20 seconds, the picture provided said. Check in with yourself mentally to make sure that everything still feels comfortable and okay. It's important to keep up with your mental sex hygiene as well. Mental sex hygiene. That's the first time I've heard that. The poster gave an example of how to set clear boundaries and provided example questions for people who are having sex to ask each other. Acknowledge and respect each other's boundaries. Blah, 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 blah. So it's like, and that was basically the whole thing. It's like, if you're going to have sex, reduce the amount of sexual partners that you have, which is a pretty good, I feel like, call me old fashioned, but I feel like that's a pretty good way to live anyway. But especially during a goddamn pandemic, dude. What are we doing? And I think this just kind of represents why people get confused about corona, you know, things sometimes. It's like in a store, you know, you got to prevent the spread of coronavirus by being 6 feet apart and by keeping your mask on and by not touching anything and by making sure that, you know, your hands are sanitized and all that. And all that's good. Anytime that you're around some other people, you got to make sure that got to keep your distance. Oop, okay, cool. Thank you. You know, being polite. But if you're going to do the tango, you know, then you can still be that close, even with masks on, and still stay safe from the virus. That doesn't make sense at all. That makes zero sense. Anyway, I don't understand, like, the idea of getting close enough to have sex, but you know, having a mask on so you don't have to, you don't kiss or anything like that. But everything else is cool. Everything else, it'll probably be safe. Everything else will probably be safe. You'll probably be fine. Sure. All right. Thank you, St. Olaf College. St. Olaf, the saint of terrible advice and being a total nerd who doesn't know anything about sex, probably Saint Olaf. Moving on. There's more. You know how we feel about the Danes, the Danish people. They're a truly silly race, and I feel no shame in saying that. I'm sure that they are, as individuals, very wonderful, warm, loving human beings. But as a people, they are very they're very scary and even disturbing at times. Okay, last time we talked about the mink genocide that was being enacted with very little time for litigation or oversight or anything like that, and they were like, "Oops, yes, we're sorry, we didn't mean to kill all the minks. I'm sorry that we killed all of them, but that is our mistake, and I'm very sorry." I'm working on my Danish accent, and I'm going to keep working on it through the rest of this segment because they I was looking some things up for my class that I'm teaching. I'm teaching in a literature class, and we're going in into some dystopian literature. And so I found and am finding some things about the so-called Fourth Industrial Revolution. And if you don't know something about the Fourth Industrial Revolution, and if I'm the first person who has told you that, A, don't feel shame. I had not heard it either. But B, it's time to dive in to the Fourth Industrial Revolution. It's time to start seeing what people are thinking of implementing in our world as it becomes more automated and more technologically focused, and more, as the worlds of biology and technology kind of collide. There are some pretty serious questions that come along with that. Some very, shall we say, Orwellian things might end up happening if AI is to take over, if things like that happen. And so I was kind of using it as a real world connection to the dystopian literature that I was teaching. But then I started reading this article written by a Danish member of a member of parliament from Denmark. Okay. And the headline reads thusly: "Welcome to 2030. I own nothing, have no privacy, and life has never been better." Okay. Now we're going to go through this because it is insane, and it's the most ridiculous thing that I've ever heard, but it's because I'm an American, and it's because these people are Danish, and because they live in a different society, and all that stuff, blah, 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 blah. But the Danes are truly silly people if they think that this is exactly what life in the cities are going to be like in 2030. Says, "Welcome to the year 2030. Welcome to my city, or should I say our city. I don't own anything. I don't own a car. I don't own a house. I don't own any appliances or any clothes. It might seem odd to you, but it makes perfect sense for us in this city. Everything you considered a product has now become a service. We have access to transportation, accommodation, food, and all the things we need in our daily lives. One by one, all these things became free, so it ended up not making sense for us to own much." Now, this idea of the products becoming a service is something that the Fourth Industrial Revolution is largely founded on, because that happens a lot already, right? We are taking Ubers. A lot of people take Ubers to work instead of owning a car, or they, you know, take subways or other forms of transportation. They don't have to own a car because they live in a city, right? And so there are already things like that going on, but the way that they're talking is that you don't have to own anything. You don't even have to own your clothes. Moving on, first communication became digitized and free to everyone. Then when clean energy became free, things started to move quickly. Transportation dropped dramatically in price. It made no sense for us to own cars anymore because we could call a driverless vehicle or a flying car for... Yeah, okay. Flying cars in 2030. Now, is going to be... looking back at the archives of this podcast and be like, "Oh yes, they didn't even think that we could have flying cars by 2030. Boy, were they wrong." And now they're all uploaded into the simulation and, you know, feeding machines as human batteries. But flying cars for longer journeys within minutes, they say. "We started transporting ourselves in a much more organized and coordinated way when public transport became easier, quicker, and more convenient than the car. Now I can hardly believe that we accepted congestion and traffic jams, not to mention the air pollution from combustion engines. What were we thinking? Hey, man, don't talk about my culture that way. I come from Dallas. We thrive on congestion and traffic jams, all right?" How dare they try to erase my culture? My culture of near misses and bumper scrapes and a string of obscenities. Right? What were we thinking? Oh, air pollution. Hello. Have you seen a giant truck being driven in the city unnecessarily? They are the kings of air pollution. All right, moving on. Sometimes I use my bike when I go to see some of my friends. I enjoy the exercise and the ride. Okay, you robot. It kind of gets the soul to come along the journey. That is the most Danish sentence I've ever read. It kind of gets the soul to come along on the journey. Sometimes I use my bike when I go ride, and I enjoy the exercise, and the weather is good. And it kind of gets the soul to come along on the journey. That's the most Denmark sentence I've ever read in my entire life. It kind of gets the soul to come along on the journey. All right, funny how some things seem never to lose their excitement. Walking, biking, cooking, drawing, and growing plants. It makes perfect sense and reminds us of how our culture emerged out of a close relationship with nature. Now, again, all that sounds really great. Part of that, you know, riding your bike to go see people. You know, they pepper in, they're like, oh, we don't own anything. What? Oh, no, but we can ride our bikes. You know, they kind of like, oh, they pepper in nice things with the calamitous ideas of not owning, of not having ownership in some of the things. It says, in our city, we don't pay rent because someone else is using our free space whenever we do not need it. My living room is used for business meetings when I am not there. Hey, I'd rather fucking die. If I got home from a trip or even just a day of work and I found a bunch of people going over their quarterly stats in the middle of my living room, get my gun, okay? This is not happening. No. I don't care. Oh, my living room is used for business meetings when I'm not there. We're just sharing all this space. No, get out, okay? Get up out of here. Says, once in a while, I will choose to cook for myself. It is easy. The necessary kitchen equipment is delivered at my door within minutes. Since transport became free, we stopped having all those things stuffed into our homes. Why keep a pasta maker and a crepe cooker crammed into our cupboards? We can just order them when we need them. So what, you don't have like a spatula or anything like that? You just say, I need like a spatula and a pizza cutter and some salt. Delivered at this time, and then they come, you borrow it, and then you give it back to them. This has also made the breakthrough of the circular economy easier. When products are turned into services, no one has an interest in things with a short lifespan. Everything is designed for durability, repairability, and recyclability. The materials are flowing more quickly in our economy, and blah, 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 blah. Environmental problems seem far away because it's clean, blah, blah, blah. Listen to how great this could be, blah, 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 blah. The death of shopping. It says, shopping? I can't really remember what that is. Shut up. It's 10 years in the future, okay? If you don't remember what shopping is, then you have amnesia because you forget things from 10 years ago. That's a pretty significant thing. For most of us, it has been turned into choosing things to use. Sometimes I find this fun, and sometimes I just want the algorithm to do it for me. Uh-uh. No. No, 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 no. I'm not letting an algorithm choose what I wear, okay? And that's final. I'm not letting a robot dress me. They don't know what I like or what I don't like. It says, it knows my taste better than I do by now. That's because you're unoriginal. When AI and robots took over so much of our work, we suddenly had time to eat well, sleep, and spend time with other people. The concept of rush hour makes no sense anymore, since the work that we do can be done at any time. I don't really know if I would call it work anymore. It is more like thinking time, creation time, and development time. Okay. For a while, everything was turned into entertainment, and people did not want to bother themselves with difficult issues. It was only at the last minute that we found out how to use all these new technologies for better purposes than just killing time. Oh, at the last minute, we'll figure it out. Okay, so you're saying that the YouTube holes that people go down, the endless Netflix binges, the constant streaming of information and entertainment, that's just going to, oh, at the last minute, we're just going to be like, oh, you mean it's to make our lives better? Well, what the hell have I been doing? Can you believe? Oh, man, I can't believe we used to use these things for entertainment, but now I'm using it for thinking time and creation time. Yeah, that'll work. You think that that's all that's keeping people back? Is just that they don't have time? No. They just kill it. They like killing. They like killing the time with a knife. People love to kill. I love to kill time, dude. I am very lazy at my core. And the way that this is coming across tonally is that after everything was automated and AI does most of our work for us, that we would just use all that extra time so well and be creative and have fun and be healthy and all that. No, you'd have a bunch of people. You'd have WALL-E people, okay? WALL-E is the best depiction of what would probably happen if what this person is saying could come true, comes true, all right? This idea that everyone would use all this time for expanding their health is a bunch of bullshit. We'd all become fat WALL-E people and play virtual golf and eat out of straws. Moving on. They live in different kinds of lives outside of the city. My biggest concern is all the people who do not live in our city. See, this is where it gets real sinister. Those we lost on the way. Bitch. You didn't lose anyone, okay? They still live over there. You still got to get along with those people. As those who decided that it became too much, all this technology. Yeah, that's why people leave. Those who felt obsolete and useless when robots and AI took over big parts of our jobs. Those who got upset with the political system and turned against it. Okay, now that, dear Denmark, is where you lose me. So why'd you have to mention the political system? No one was talking about a political system before, but that was inherent. And so anyway, blah, blah, blah. And it keeps on going about the people we lost along the way. And it stops just short of talking about, you know, genociding those people. So people that know anything about dystopian literature or know anything about the idea of utopia and the fact that it could possibly exist, know that it can't. Okay. Sorry. It's not going to happen. It's too good to be true is actually true. The idea of something being too good to be true. You got to listen to that impulse, right? Oh, this sounds really great. Yeah, there's a reason, because it's just not going to happen and it's a dream. He can sing, folks. So anyway, that's something that disturbed me greatly. Enjoy reading that and enjoy reading the rest of the stuff that's on the World Economic Forum, because if you want to really freak yourself out, if you really want to not sleep at night, do a deep dive into some of the things that they're talking about there, and it's truly horrifying to consider the left turns, so to speak. The wrong turns, I'll say, not left turns, as opposed to right turns, who cares? That was not a political statement. The wrong terms, that turns that we can take with this technology can lead down some truly horrifying alleyways of the human condition. So, you know, enjoy reading about that and thinking those things with me. All right, the last thing, though, I do not want to leave you on a bum note. I want to leave you with something positive and uplifting, because I know that you're going to need it going into the week that we have coming up, going into meet with your family, maybe, or staying home, whichever you're deciding to do. We need to have a positive energy moving in to next week. And what better way to foster that positive energy than with a lesson, a moral lesson from our good friend, Darman. Thank you. Yes, Darman, very excited to see what we got here today. The thumbnail reads, "Girlfriend dumps her boyfriend for being too short. His reaction is shocking." His reaction is shocking. So we're on the lookout for a couple of things. A too short boyfriend and a shocking reaction. Let's see if we get that as we go now to the Dalai Lama for his infinite and eternal wisdom.
You look absolutely stunning.
Gosh, I'm so much taller than you.
Isn't that so nice to hear whenever you compliment someone to immediately be put down for something that you can't control? Yes. This happens to me all the time. Thank you, Darman, for bringing this to everyone's attention. You're really changing lives, all right?
It's okay. I think you're beautiful.
I know that. I'm not the problem, Jay. You are.
Bitch.
I just wish you weren't so short so I could wear heels every once in a while.
Sorry. I could try to find some shoes that'll make me taller.
Nothing is gonna help you, Jay.
Well, and that's the moment where the video should end, because it'd be like, I'm out. Thanks. Cool. You're being a real bitch, and I don't want to deal with this anymore. You can take yourself to dinner. But this guy, you know, maybe he's dealt with her before. Maybe he knows that this will blow over. So he, you know, they continue on.
Just really excited to wear these.
Ah, she sees another couple.
Your table will be ready shortly.
Thank you so much.
Hi, would you mind taking
another couple
a picture for us?
Whose boyfriend is taller.
Where do you want?
Right here. Aw. You guys are really cute.
The sad music.
You're lucky to have such a tall guy.
Thanks. He's pretty great. Did you make...
Dude... If someone said, like, something about, like, you're lucky to have, like, such a short wife or whatever, or if someone said, hey, you're lucky to have such a something, I'd be like, okay, wait, what? You know, she just goes, thanks, he's really great. You know, like, if someone compliment, like, I feel like I would catch that. Just be like, hold on, what'd you say? The lucky to have a tall guy? I mean, I guess it's fine. I don't want to get in the middle of this, is how I would feel. But anyway. She gets in the middle of it, whether she likes it or not.
A picture of you two?
We would love that.
No. No, thanks. That's okay. Thank you, though.
What are you trying to do? Embarrass me? I don't want anyone to know that I'm dating a short guy.
Super normal thing to do and say. Hey, do you want me to take a picture of you guys? Oh, no, that's okay. And then as soon as they walk off, what the hell was that? You want to take a picture with me, a tall woman, and you, a short man? Think of what they'll say. You know, it's just a weird hill to die on, I feel like. But again, he just takes it in stride, and he's just like, you know what, baby, you're right. I probably messed up. No, he doesn't think that, but he just, like, feels sad. And again, man, you're worth it. You're a handsome fella. Get out of there, okay? She clearly doesn't deserve you, okay?
It's ready. Follow me, please. Whenever you're ready.
Thank you. I got it.
Takes care of the bill, of course, because he's a gentleman.
Do you mind handing me the bill?
Okay, that was a weird one. He doesn't lean over the table to get the bill. He just asks, babe, do you mind handing me the bill? Because she put it on her side. The waitress did. And she acts so exasperated by this. And it's like, are we supposed to assume that because he's a short man, he can't reach over the table and get the bill? And that this is like a common thing. It's like, if only your arms were long enough. It's a weird one. It's a weird one.
Thank you. You know what? Almost forgot. I got you a little something.
Aww.
Now she's happy.
What is it?
Now she doesn't mind who's short or who's tall.
A pair of heels?
You bastard.
You not like them?
Is this some kind of joke? You know I can't wear heels around you. I'm twice your size.
She's really hung up on this, and I feel like it's really more of a her thing. I really do. I think this is an insecurity on her part. Maybe she's been made fun of for being tall. I'm sure that since she's a tall woman, she was probably taller than a lot of the boys in her class and things like that. And so I'm sure people have said cruel things, but it does not, lady, give you the right to treat someone like shit because they just gave you a pair of heels. Okay?
I wish you weren't so short so I could actually wear them.
Well.
Look. It's not about what's on the outside. It's all about what's on the inside.
Yeah, dude.
Kate, I've been real nice to you. I give you compliments. I buy you dinner. And I buy you nice gifts. Isn't that what really matters?
That's a weird one. That's a weird left turn. Like, isn't that what really matters, babe? That I buy you things and buy your dinner and tell you you look pretty? Isn't that what really matters at the end of the day? Not compatibility or general chemistry, which is, of course, lacking because he keeps on taking it in stride. She keeps on just calling him short for no reason, for her own insecurities. Let's be honest. God. And this happens all the time, okay? I'm so glad that Darman is covering this hard-hitting material. You don't find this kind of moral guidance anywhere on YouTube, and I'm glad that we have the Dalai Lama to take us through to Nirvana.
I don't care about any of that.
Oh, well.
I've tried to make it work, Jay, but I can't anymore. It is over. I need to be with someone who isn't half my size.
Yeah, okay, we heard that math already. I've tried to make it work. I don't really know.
Kate breaks up with Jay and leaves him there heartbroken.
Ugh, what happens, Darman?
Shortly after, she moves on and hits it off with the taller guy.
Now already I see on the taller guy's face, he's not going to treat her as good as Jay did. What was his name? Jay did. Because he is looking pretty contemptuous at her while she is head over heels at him. I bet she gets her just desserts.
Everything seems great in the beginning. Until she begins to notice that her new boyfriend doesn't treat her like Jay did.
Called it.
He would never compliment her.
Oh, no.
He was never excited to be seen with her.
He's like, bitch, no way. You're gross.
And he wouldn't even pay for her dinner.
He scooted the bill to her.
She started missing the way Jay used to treat her.
Should have thought about that.
A few months pass, and then one day, Kate happens to run into Jay.
This always happens in a Darman video where whoever wronged you in the past, like, you end up... It's creating this fantasy that anyone who you've had a problem with in the past, you're gonna run into again, okay? That's basically what Darman does, is he sets it up to where it's like, if you run into the person who wronged you before, then and you have to make sure your life is going better than theirs, because otherwise they will win. And I don't know, it's a weird thing, but apparently everyone in Darman land lives within 10 blocks of each other, because they run into each other all the time, usually in the same parking garages, this time in the same restaurant.
Your table will be ready in just a few minutes.
Great, thanks.
Jay?
Kate? How have you been?
I've been better. My boyfriend and I broke up.
Oh, no.
And if I'm being honest, I've been thinking a lot about you lately.
Have you?
I miss the way you used to make me feel.
Tall? She used to make you feel tall and gainly, apparently. But also a little bit... Did he make you feel loved and you couldn't handle it? What happened?
And I was wondering...
Excuse me. Would you mind taking a photo?
Yeah, sure.
Who is she taking a photo
with? Come on, babe. Get in.
Jay.
Wait.
Oh, shit. And she's taller.
You two are a couple?
Yeah.
That's mm-hmm. Right. You're not embarrassed to be seen with a guy that's shorter than you.
Are you kidding? No way. It's not about what's on the outside. It's about what's on the inside.
Oh,
he treats
shit,
me like a
dude.
Queen.
I never thought about it that way, actually.
Besides, good things come in small packages.
Hold on, dude. Okay. Here's the thing. I decided like a long time ago, I know, so noble of me, that I would not mind... this was before I was married. Like, when I was As a single man, I'd be like, yeah, I could date and be with somebody who's taller than me, because it came up in a conversation. He's like, oh, someone said I could never do that. I was like, well, then you're vapid and you know, no one would be with you anyway. But I was, you know, talking to them and I don't think I would mind, right? But I will say this, that if I was with a girl who was taller than me, and then she said, besides, good things come in small packages about me, I think I'd be like, hold on, baby. Hold on. Whoa. We can roll that back. We don't have to add that part, okay? I understand what you mean, and I know that you mean well, but please, and the look on his face at the pause screen that I have, he's like, yeah, small packages. It's great. Small pack. That's me. Old small package McGee. man, it's going to be really hard not to name the episode Small Package McGee. I'll try to resist. I'm not sure if I can. Anyway, let's see what the lesson that she learns. I still haven't seen his shocking reaction, though. I don't know what's shocking. The fact that he didn't, like, kick her ass to the curb the first time that she called him short. Who knows?
I love you.
I love you too.
Both looking at her like, what's up, bitch? Take our picture. Yeah, don't you feel silly? Oh, and then the quote is, it's not about what's on the inside, it's about what's on the outside, it's about what's on the inside that counts. Thank you, Darman. Thank you for that. I was really hoping that the last quote was good things come in small packages, because that would be hilarious. But Darman is not about the you know, being funny in any capacity, okay? Not on purpose anyway, because he does this, okay?
Hey, Darman fam, I hope you love that video. So you see, we're not just telling stories, we're changing lives. And when you share my videos, you're helping to change lives too. I appreciate you, and I'll see you in the...
I appreciate you. That, and I'll see you in the next video. Yeah, we got it, Darman. Thank you so much. There's some real pain in those eyes in this particular, in this promo or the end of the video clip. He's smiling, but I sense he doesn't want to. That's always with Darman. Anyway, I appreciate you for listening to the podcast, and please remember that when you share the podcast with your friends, you're not just sharing a podcast that tells cool stories.
We're changing lives.
That's right. And so make sure that you tell your friends about the podcast. Share it with whoever that you want to, especially potential enemies that you might have. But until next week, guys,
I appreciate you,
and we will talk to you next week.